John, a good guest, just before spring training begins, and really any time during the year, it's a place you gravitate to in the Met clubhouse. It's Brandon Nimmo.
Yeah, really looking forward to this one. We absolutely love covering this guy. Just a terrific personality. I mean, he has adapted to New York from Wyoming like nobody's business. And it's going to be interesting to hear what he has to say about Alonso, about the new team, the new manager, and everything else. So really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, he certainly adapted better to New York than I would have to Wyoming. We'll talk to him about that adaptation and more. John and I will play winners and losers this offseason. We'll talk about the impact of Corbin Burns going to the Orioles. We'll play hit or error at the end if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
John, it was a good week while we were gone for the Baltimore Orioles. They have at least a preliminary sale to a bunch of equity guys who have lots and lots of money, who are getting 40% of the team, on the way to get 100% at some point, which should allow them to do more and more stuff financially over the next 5, 10 years when some of their young players are coming along. And look, we all knew it going into the offseason. The thing they needed the most was an ace. And to me, Corbin Burns is the real ace because he is a real ace, not just because his stuff is great, and but he's durable. And like that's the Gerrit Cole's the best of it. If we were picking a second guy, could you do much better? A Zach Wheeler, Logan Webb, those Strider. He's right in that group of who would you pick for two? So it's a great move for the Orioles to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the guy that they needed the most in terms of on the field. And no question about it. I agree with you 100%. The thing they needed the most was a new owner. Sorry to pick on the Angeloses, but I mean, it's amazing that they built such a good team with that ownership and the lack of spending. Now they should have spending power and obviously a lot of room to work. I mean, their payroll is almost nothing. And it'd be nice to see them lock up Rutschman and Henderson and ultimately Holiday as well. And then now they have a chance. I mean, I think they talked to Rutschman a few years ago and offered him like nothing, almost. Basically, there was not even a thought of it. So it's good they have a new owner. And obviously, Burns, that's the guy they needed. I wouldn't be shocked if they are still working because they have such a great prospect stash. They could do another one if they wanted to. But right now, with Bradish and with Grayson Rodriguez, I think they have one of the best rotations in the game.
John, one of the points that you've made pretty consistently, especially in recent shows, is that the odds makers kept having, like, the Yankees bounce ahead of the Orioles, and the Orioles maybe not have that good a season. I'm curious where it will be after Burns lands there. And just look, Burns going there is bad for everyone in the AL East and everyone in the AL because it's so clearly what they needed to go with this, especially young, terrific group of position players. The one that sticks out for me for the Yankees is, am I thinking it because Mike Elias is there and Zig Megdahl? Are they about to become like the Astros 2-0, right? They're following that blueprint, which is they tanked for a while and they got great draft picks and they're able to get Rutschman with the 1-1. They're able to get Jackson Holliday with the one, a great pick in the first pick of the second round on Gunnar Henderson. And then when it came time for the Justin Verlander move, the Gerrit Cole move, they use their deep farm system, the Astros, to go get them in the way that they, the Orioles just traded two pretty good prospects for Burns. And all the prospect lists have come out like teams, franchises in the last week. And even with the trade, the people who do this work say the Orioles are still far and ahead of everyone else prospect-wise. I'm wondering, are we watching Astros 2-0, and is that a real nightmare for the Yankees?
Yeah, very possible. And Mike Elias was with the Astros. He certainly knew the blueprint. He seems to be following it well. He seems to be a very patient guy. They lose 110 games 3 years in a row, something like that. I mean, they were a disaster. It was kind of like Houston. It is not a big market like Houston, so they don't have that advantage. But now they presumably will have an owner that will spend more. I can't imagine that he doesn't. I mean, it was day one that he was the owner that they got Burns, so they're already on the right track. I mean, I think that is a huge move for Baltimore. I don't get why the Yankees have been favored. I don't know that that's going to change now, but as I said, I'm not a betting person, but I mean, you got a young team that won 101 games versus an old team that won 82 games. And I agree, the Yankees were better than 82. They had a lot of injuries that presumably they won't be as bad next year with the injuries, and they'll do better. And they got Soto. But I mean, Burns is a huge move. And I mean, to me, stacking it up right now, to me, the Orioles are the clear favorite. I don't know what Las Vegas says. And they should know more than I do, and I think they do generally, but to me, they're the favorite.
And look, John, NYPost.com, John writes for us all the time. He wrote about winners and winners this week,
Right.
and you
I didn't do the losers.
once the Burns, no, we'll do losers here because that's who we are, but you injected the Orioles once the Burns thing was made, so I know they're on your winners list. And clearly, I think anybody who's looking at this offseason, as much as we always should look and say whoever wins the offseason doesn't typically win the regular season, it's hard to look at what the Dodgers did this offseason and not pick them as the winner of winners since they ended up with both Ohtani and Yamamoto, plus Tyler Glasnow. It just feels like who else could it be?
Right. I mean, they spent over $1 billion in Teoscar Hernandez and Paxton. But I mean, obviously, getting Ohtani and Yamamoto, that's $1 billion right there. And, they look like a great team, a super team, shall we say. I still think they'll probably sign Kershaw. Maybe he'll be ready by the end of the year. They'll slow play Bueller. They're the clear winner. I mean, Orioles, I injected them. I redid the column to put them up there as a winner as well. I like what the small market Royals and Reds did. I like the fact that they spent, even though they don't have big revenue. So hats off to them. And, I put the Yankees on the list because of the Soto move. Obviously, that's going to help them. And those are my winners. Now, the losers, they're pretty obvious, right? I think we can agree on the losers, right?
Let's
The Red
stick with the
Sox.
winners. We'll get to the
Okay,
losers
all
later.
right. Wow, we're being very positive today. I like it.
I'm going to throw out a winner because I think it's an interesting psychological thing for the sport. The winners include people who've never played in the major leagues. Somehow, this becomes so much more attractive. I understand there's no
Shocking.
qualifying offer on them, but Yamamoto, who probably will be very good, now has the largest contract in the history of the game. This will probably change with Bellinger and Snell and Montgomery, but Jung Ho Lee right now at 113 million is the fourth highest free agent signing this offseason. Yariel Rodriguez from the Blue Jays, 32 million. Yuki Matsui, 28 million from the Padres. Man, do we love this in a sport? Like, hey, we don't know their blemishes quite like
Right.
we know everybody's here's blemishes.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to give up the draft choice, I guess, for him. But not only did they spend $325 million, which is $1 million more than was spent on Cole. Now, Cole is probably underpaid at this point, but they have a $51 million, I believe, posting fee to pay on that. So, I
Yes,
mean,
on
it's
top of
close to
that.
$380 million.
Then
I mean,
add that
I
they're at the top of the luxury tax and they're going to have to
right.
pay that because they went over three, 290,
Right.
what is it, 295? I forget,
I think it's
yeah, the
over
top of
3, but yeah,
293,
it's in that range. Yeah, I mean, it's unusual. I mean, everybody won Yamamoto. It's funny that Snell's out there. He's won two Cy Youngs. I get it. He's 31, right? And Yamamoto's 25, and that is a huge factor in this. But guy has won two Cy Youngs, including last year, and had a 1-2 ERA from late May on. I mean, maybe it's the asking price. I don't know, but we're not hearing of a lot of action on a guy. And he was at your awards dinner. He seems like a decent guy. At least I watched on TV. You were there. I watched it. He gave a nice speech. It's shocking to me that Blake Snell's out there, and he may get half as much as Yamamoto, and when you count the posting fee, we don't know. We really don't know at this point what he's going to get, but I mean, it's stunning that these guys who have not played at all in the major leagues are doing the best.
Yeah, look, why don't we pivot to losers just because it's a place to jump off? he's going to get these guys a lot of money, right? But right now, the Scott Boras clients are kind of sitting out there. Spring training's about a week away from starting for everyone. It's probably a sign they might not get what they anticipated they were going to get when the offseason began. You know, just the finer points. Snell, Montgomery, Chapman, and Bellinger are the four biggest free agents left. They're all Scott's clients. And so they're kind of sitting out there right now as spring training goes. So I wonder if that falls into the loser's bucket.
Well, we'll see when they sign in May. They obviously have patience, like the Orioles have patience. You know, we saw Bryce Harper coming off of his worst season sign on February 28th, right? So you don't know
Yes.
where this is
And we
going to
know
go.
Scott pulls stuff at the end, like he's, great at this. And we're not going to have to send a tin cup around for him,
No, I mean, we're going to have Nimmo on. He got Nimmo $162 million. I mean, does anyone think Bellinger could get less than Nimmo? I mean, we love Nimmo. He's a terrific player, but Bellinger was an MVP. He was in the top 10 of MVPs last year. He's younger as a free agent. So I wouldn't worry about him if I'm Scott. Montgomery may just be waiting for Texas to finally resolve the TV issue that may come February 9th, which is a couple of days from when we're doing this, February 5th. So I wouldn't worry about that one. The one that really puzzles me is Snell, though, two-time Cy Young winner. You know, he's the only free agent of this age with two Cy Youngs other than Saberhagen and Pedro, right? They were actually 32, I believe. He's the youngest. So that's the one that really shocks me. And, he may be concerned about that. I don't know what's going on there, but that one may be concerning. Bellinger, I have no feeling that he's not going to do well. Same with Montgomery. And, I think Chapman's got teams. Certainly the Giants make sense for Chapman. And I think the Cubs make sense for everybody. Yeah, my idea was that for the losers, and I get it. At this point, right now, these guys are still waiting out there without jobs. I would suggest the Cubs, Red Sox, who I give them credit for bringing in Theo, not just because he was on our show. And of course, we love everybody who's on the show, but Theo Epstein has won three World Series. Don't give me the hand. We do. So, the Red Sox haven't done much in terms of players, but that's a good move for them. Cubs, I thought they were going to do more once they brought in Craig Counsell. They still may. Giants, I mean, to me, they're only a loser because the Dodgers have done so much great stuff. The Diamondbacks have done good stuff. Giants have done some good stuff too, but I mean, they're coming from a low point right now. They've had two disappointing seasons in a row. They obviously need to do more. I mean, I'm going to be surprised if they don't come up with one of these four guys, but you never know. There's surprises in free agency. You never know. But like I said, I wouldn't be worried if I'm Bellinger or Montgomery. Snell to me is the curious one.
Yeah, and look, if you think the late off season is the off late off season of Boras, wait till next off season, assuming nobody signs before then, and Altuve might, but it's Altuve and Bregman from the Astros, and then maybe the three biggest guys in the market in Soto, Alonso, and Corbin Burnes, who we've already mentioned here, are all Scott clients. On the subject, you already mentioned it, of a Scott client. Brandon Nimmo, the outfielder of the New York Mets, will be joining us next on the show. John and I are so happy to be joined by one of our favorites, Brandon Nimmo. It's, time flies. Brandon is already down in St. Lucie. It will be year nine as a New York Met, year two on his 8-year contract with the Mets. And Brandon, I didn't introduce you as a left fielder or a center fielder, so why don't we start there? You have obviously been the center fielder of the team. I don't love multi-part questions, but why don't I deal with what have you been told by who that you're doing this year, and how amenable are you to wherever it is you're going to be playing?
First of all, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's always good to talk with you and John. And I think to answer your question, what was discussed in this offseason was David gave me a call early on, introduced himself, said, hey, I'm looking to make the team better. and just kind of set out parameters of, hey, I really believe in defense. And so, he was just saying how he wanted to make the team better. So then he reached out to me a second time and said, there are some pretty good defensive center fielders on the market. How would you feel about that if we pursued any of them? And so he, approached me with it, very cordially and asked for my opinion on it. And I said, honestly, David, if it makes our team better, then I'm all for it. I want to be competitive. I want to make the playoffs and I want to have a chance to win the World Series. That's my goals at this point in my career. And, I would love to do anything that it takes in order to do that. So, I said, if you feel like going in that direction would make us better, then sure. But I know that if somebody is coming in to play center field, then they must be pretty dang good at center field. And so, then he kind of approached me, I think it was either late December, somewhere in there. It might have been mid-December, and it was like, hey, how do you feel about Harrison Bader? We're kind of having talks with him. And I said, he's an amazing center fielder. Obviously, the stats speak for themselves. And so, what do you think? He's well, we might have a shot at him. So, so we'll see. So yeah, then we ended up signing him, and David just kind of called and he said, listen, it's going to be totally up to you whether you want to, be able to go in both directions and play center field and left field. Or if you want to, just stay in one position, we're fine with that too. So, I said, you know what, let's go to spring training. Let's see how this all works out. And we'll start to get a better feel when we all start to play together and everything. And, but I'm completely open to making the team better in whatever capacity that is. So whether that's in center field for me or whether that's in left, is still to be seen. But it's also going to come down to how Carlos Mendoza wants to write the lineup each and every day. So I think having that versatility, really can make us a better team. And I think that's what David was looking for. And he's really, really big on defense. As well as he should be with, with our park. Our park plays more like a pitcher's park. And so, we really need good defense out there. And, we need to be winning these one run ball games. And a lot of times defense, is what that comes down to. So, yeah, I feel like, David approached it, from a perception of, I was willing to do whatever made the team better, and he felt like that is a situation this off season that would make the team better. And so that's kind of how we arrived at this position that we're at now.
Brandon, I'm not surprised that you're flexible and all about winning, as we know that that's the way you are. So, and I know you handle tough questions too, so I'm going to dive right in. Pete Alonso, there's going to be a lot said about Pete Alonso and his contract situation this year. What are your thoughts on Pete as a player, as a clubhouse guy? I mean, that's only an issue because somebody brought it up last year, I think, but I'll let you speak to that. And would you like to see him stay a Met?
I agree. I would love to see Pete stay as a Met. I think that he's been nothing but, positive impact on our clubhouse. He's always fiery and ready to go, and he always wants the best out of himself and everybody around him. And so, I think he is a great clubhouse guy. I think he is obviously, one of the best power hitters in the game. And I really think that he wants to and should stay a New York Met. Ultimately, that will come down to what happens this season and in this off season, and what is best for him and his family. I obviously going through that situation for myself. You have a lot of suitors and you got to decide what direction you want your life to go in. And he will as well. But obviously being selfish, I would love to have him. He's always been such a presence in our lineup and always come up with big hits and been that clutch player and someone that I think can turn a lineup around in an instant. But ultimately it's going to come down to where he wants to end up and where he wants to go with his family at the end of the year. But I think that, I think he does nothing but bring positivity and good things to the clubhouse. And then obviously we all know what he does on the field. So, would love to see him staying in a Mets uniform. But ultimately I think that'll be up to him.
Brandon, nothing quite aggravates me like John getting to ask the tough question. So I guess I got to try to see if I could like one up it. Arguably your two best healthiest seasons were under Buck Showalter. Did Buck get a raw deal? Should he still be the manager of the Mets? See what I did there,
That's
John? See
great. Yeah,
that?
great. Yeah, keep throwing them at me. You know what? I had a great relationship with Buck, and I wish him nothing but the best. And I enjoyed playing underneath him as so many others have, I believe. And there's a reason that he's been in the game for as long as he has. He really treats his players well. He does so much on and off the field for them. Really prepared me in a way that I hadn't been prepared before on situations that might only come up maybe once, maybe never in a season, but maybe once every few years in a season. But for you to be prepared for those situations. And I really enjoyed my relationship and my time with Buck. It's obviously not up to me on whether he gets to stay or not. But I did enjoy my time underneath him. But I am looking forward to this new chapter. Obviously we had a whole lot of new changes this off season, and it's down to the president of baseball ops and the new manager and new so, somewhat new co coaching staff around us. And then all the new players that we're going to have, there's going to be a lot of newness this off or this spring training. And so I am excited about that. That always brings change, and change is different and hard sometimes, but it can also be really good. And so I will always say that I personally enjoyed my time with Buck, and loved him as a manager, and would have loved to have gotten him that World Series. I'm wishing him the best in his future, which I'm sure is not done.
Mets management honestly telegraphed that they were going to try to compete this year, but really go for it the following year. So, I mean, they made a lot of logical moves. I think they filled out the rotation fairly well, considering those objectives. And, obviously got bullpen pieces at the end, but, you don't have the big names that you had last year. Try to convince me that this team is going to contend this year, because I think a lot of the fans are thinking it's going to take a step back.
I mean, understandably so. We totally went with a different approach this year. Obviously last year going out and getting Verlander, myself making some big splashes. It's definitely a different approach. It didn't work last year, what we put together. I'm not saying it's because of the signings. I think it was more of, we ran into a time where we didn't play that well, and we kind of couldn't recover from that. And so, I think going into this year, they were circling of trying to be much more competitive, but in a different manner. I know Steve is very much of the mindset of being adaptable. And if you don't adapt, you die. And so if you try it one way and it doesn't work, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do it that way again. And so I think he's willing to try a few different ways. And David had a different idea going into this season of how we could compete. Ultimately, I think it falls to if our guys can stay healthy, and that goes for the rest of the league as well. If a few key players go down on some of these teams, it completely changes the outlook of your season. So, first and foremost for us, I think just going into spring training, I'm going to be preaching that be taking care of your bodies and looking towards the long term, not just the short term, because we're going to need everybody pulling on one end of the rope in order to be successful. But I think we made some great additions that can really help us out. Like I mentioned, we play in a pitcher's ballpark, and so it's more of really trying to have, like David said, good defense and good pitching. And I think we made some additions where we're deeper in the starting staff, and we're also have Senga coming off of a year where he got his feet wet, and I think he's really ready to step up as our ace. And then Quintana, when he was back and healthy, I mean, he really did do amazing. And I was so impressed by him and his work ethic and really just him, his ability to be a bulldog on the mound. So I'm excited for these other pieces that we've added in the starting rotation to learn from them and to learn what it takes to succeed in New York and in the in City Field in particular. But you know, I like these bullpen pieces that are added. I think depth is a really big, important thing to success for the season. And I think we've added that. But by no means am I saying like, hey, we're the favorites. You know, I think we're definitely going to be the underdogs, you know, in this season. But there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think people were thinking much of us in 22 anyways either. And you know, we ended up having a pretty dang good season. So you know, baseball is a funny game. It you know, you can think you know what's going to happen, but that's why they play the game, and that's why we play the season is it really usually comes down to just a few games, and if those few games can turn our way rather than the other team's way this year, then we might find ourselves right sitting right in the playoffs, and you never know what happens there. You know, last 2 years it's been wild card teams, you know, that have made it. And you know, just because you win your division or just because you know you have a great season doesn't mean you're going to have a great time in the playoffs. So I think your goal is to get into the playoffs and then roll the dice from there.
Brandon, you mentioned having some interactions with David Stearns along the way this winter, especially about your role and the bringing in of Harrison Bader. I wonder, have you had interactions with Carlos Mendoza? And have you got an idea? You look, again, you're not a newbie here. You're the senior guy on the
Right.
team. You know New York is a little different beast.
Yeah.
He worked in New York. He's a first-time manager.
Yeah.
You have a feel for him and how you think he might handle this.
I've been able to have quite a few conversations with Carlos, and we've started that relationship already. Yes, he was in New York, and he knows what it's about. It is going to be a different role in the manager situation. I think he's got what it takes. He's been very calm, cool, and collected with me. He's been very open to, you know, what we want as players out of him and what he wants out of us. You know, and I think that you know, this is going to be a great jumping off point for us for spring training to just see, you know, okay, let's get the interactions in and out. You know, start getting these new guys acclimated to, you know, how things are going to be run here and the differences in New York. Like you said, he's been there for a while and he can speak to it as well, and so can I. And so, you know, I think getting all of that out of the way in spring training, and then, you know, kind of giving us a good fresh start going forward for the season. Obviously, I'm not a future teller. I can't, you know, I can't predict it, but you know, I think that he has the makings of a great manager. And you know, I know that David loved him through the interview process, and that's the reason that they chose him. And so, you know, I think this is going to be, you know, one of those things where we got to wait and see, you know, because I think, you know, on paper, again, like I said earlier with the teams, on paper, everything looks good, makes sense. But then we all have to go out and we all have to prove it during the year, right? You know, I have to do that as well as Francisco and Pete. And so he's going to do that as well. And I think he's ready for the challenge, and that's all you can ask. And so, yeah, I'm excited about it, and I've loved the interactions that I've had with him so far. But right, only time will tell. So, we'll see what happens.
You know, you're that rare player from Wyoming. I should have done some research. I don't know if there are any others, or it might be one other or two others. I don't know. But, you know, how has New York been for you, and how close did you come? I know we talked in spring training last year, and I guess the Giants were pretty aggressive, and they were talking to Aaron Judge at the same time. So how close did you come to leaving, and how has New York been for you? Because it has been difficult to adapt for some of the guys who are not, you know, from a big city. What do you do when you're in Manhattan? And do you live in Manhattan in the season? I know you're in Port St. Lucie right now, and there are a lot, but.
So we lived in Long Island City for the 6 years prior to free agency, and you know, it was just across the way from Manhattan, so I didn't have to like cross any bridges or tunnels in order to get to the field, because I did do that when I first came up, when I was staying over in a hotel over in Manhattan, and a couple of times there was like a little wreck you know, on one of them, and all of a sudden it takes an hour and a half to get to the field, you know. And I didn't really like that. I like my routines, and I like to be able to leave at a certain time each day. And so, I was like, you know what? Maybe if I just get on that other side, it'll work out a little bit better. And it was 20, 25 minutes to the field each day, and had parking on both sides and really had a great setup there. And we enjoyed our time, and we were just one stop into Manhattan. So if we had an off day, we would go explore the food over in Manhattan and go, maybe enjoy a Broadway show. We really tried to, win in Rome, enjoy New York. And we did, we have. I will say that when I was, first coming up, and even when my first experience with New York was Brooklyn in 2012, it was a culture shock. That there's no doubt about it. I will for sure say that, riding the like I tried riding the subway a couple times to the field, and I was like, man, this is kind of crazy. Like, I'm not used to any of this. And just the immense amount of like concrete and buildings, and it just felt overwhelming, at times. And I was so used to the big sky and open spaces, and so I would definitely say that 2012 like was a big point in my career, because it gave me a little taste of what New York was going to be like when I was hopefully going to come back later in my career. And it kind of helped me get some of the first time things out of the way, and some of the first time surprises. And it definitely was a culture shock. But that way, when I came back in 2016, I was a little more prepared for it. Not to say that it wasn't different, there weren't growing pains along the way. I don't think I've still ever gotten over New York traffic sometimes. Like, it just is what it is, and it just takes time to get places. But there's also been a ton of amazing things. The people have been amazing to me. The fans have been amazing to me. Really, they've enjoyed the way that I played, and I played hard. And no matter the outcome, they appreciated that I was giving it everything that I had. And I started to realize that, even though, people say, oh, well, if you don't produce and all that, don't get me wrong, they definitely want you to produce, but they want you to give it everything that you've got. If you're going to be out there, and if you're going to be playing, and they're going to be coming and paying to watch you, they just want to see someone giving it everything that they've got. And I started to realize that quickly, and it really rubbed off on me and gave me even more motivation to play hard and to give it everything I had every day. And so I've really enjoyed my time in New York, but it is different. You have to be able to take criticism, and you have to be able to own up to when you make a mistake, you need to be able to own up to it and say, you know what? Yep, I screwed up there. And if you do that, I mean, the fans of New York, they embrace you, man. They'll get behind you, and love you and support you. And so I really think that I've enjoyed my time here. And that was part of the reason for coming back. Yes, it did get we did talk with other teams, and the Giants were in on that, among other teams. But ultimately it came down to, at the end, Steve and Billy at the time, made it very clear that they wanted me to come back. And they made the money figure right, and we made the years right. And it just made sense at that point that I was like, you know what, I'm really comfortable here, and there's really no reason for me to leave. And so there is a business side of things that comes out, during free agency, and all of that fit. And so then we came down to, hey, can we see ourselves staying in New York for the rest of our career? And I really am comfortable here. Like I said, I live in St. Lucie, so during, that's right where spring training is, and then come right up to New York. And we've actually since made the move out to the island a little bit, so we're in like that Westbury, new kind of area. And I think it's really just been a dream come true for me, being a kid from Wyoming that grew up in a state of 500,000 people, to go to New York City and be able to be there long term, by the end of this 15 years, with the New York team, where there's 500,000 people on a block, let alone in the whole state, and so I think it's just been a dream come true for me, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. And the thing that would really put the cherry on top of all of this is bringing a World Series to the Mets. So that's ultimately my goal. I know that's the goal of Steve and the ownership, and was a big reason for me coming back. And I know that's the goal of David now coming into this president of baseball operations role. I know that he wants to win the World Series and build a team to do that as well.
Brandon, far be it for me to correct a guess, but not Brooklyn, God's country, number one.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, you mentioned how hard you play, and there was always that question of what about durability,
Yes.
which was an issue. And I looked
Yes.
it up. You've played 303 games the last 2 years. It's 29th in the majors. It's right behind Jeff McNeil, is
Yeah.
28th.
Yeah.
So how did you figure out how to play the way you play
Yeah.
and play every day? Because you, Alonso, Lindor, McNeil are everyday guys in a sport where we don't see it as much anymore.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it was actually this slogan that was said to me. It finally clicked with me in 2022, and it was you need to learn how to play smarter, not harder. And I was like, okay. You know, I didn't really get it at first. I was like, no, this is who I am. This is how I play. But then, you know, I had a neck injury in 2019 that kept me out for 3 months. And you know, it came down to this play of I was in center field. I was playing a little more shallow because there's two strikes, and Albies hit a ball really well off of DeGrom. And you know, I went back and I kind of had this split decision in my head when I was getting near the warning track of do I just play this off the wall or do I go get it? And I was right on the edge of it, and I just was like, nope, going to get it. And I did, and I ended up hitting one of those little squares that is for some reason not padded, and I ended up putting my neck underneath there and getting a bulging disc, and I made the catch, but I ended up missing 3 months. And I had Jay Bruce come over from the Cincinnati Reds, and he complimented me on how I played and everything that I did. But he said, you know, the one thing I think you need to learn is how to play smarter and not harder. He's like, nobody's going to question how hard you're going to go out and give it everything you have every day. But in order to play, you know, 150, 160 games in a year, you need to learn when to pull the reins back a little bit and when to let them go. You know, and it didn't really click with me at first. But after those injuries where I was like, you know what, Jake DeGrom, you know, he's one of the best pitchers in the world. If you let that ball play off the wall, throw it in, you know, let him get the double. There's two outs. He's probably going to strike out the next guy, and you know, and you're fine. And then guess what? You know, you're still playing for the 3 months, and you're much more valuable on that everyday basis than that one play. And that's where I started to realize that one play isn't necessarily more important than the whole season. That doesn't mean that, you know, like, hey, you know, like robbing that home run was really cool, you know, and making those diving plays is awesome. But just kind of picking your spots a little bit more, and being able to be honest with yourself on, hey, you know what? My body's not that great today. It's, you know, maybe I'm playing at 70%. So I'm going to reel it back in a little bit, make sure we get through the day, do what I can today, and then, you know, maybe feel better tomorrow and be able to make that diving play or whatever it may be. But you're so much more valuable being there on an everyday basis, especially with what I believe I bring with my bat, than, you know, sitting on the bench for 3 months. And so when it finally clicked with me, you know, Scott and I, Boris, we sat down and we had a conversation about, you know, about just that. And it was the second time that somebody was telling me, you know, like, hey, you're really good at letting it go and going and playing really hard, but now you need to master the part where you're able to kind of like rein it in and pull it back and control yourself a little bit more. And so really did that for the 2022 season. It worked. And then it worked for the 23 season as well. And so we'll be trying to implement that same thought process and getting ready during spring training in that way as well. 22 also gave me this little glimpse of what a shortened spring training would be like, and I kind of started to you know, adopt that as well, because in 22 we only have that 3 week spring training, and I was like, you know what, I spend so much time on my feet during the year and playing, and you know, this little short spring training might be beneficial for me. And it did turn out to be in 22, and then we mimicked it in 23, and you know, we got similar results. So I think you'll see us mimic that again in 24.
Brandon, there's so much we want to ask, and time is going to work against us. So let me wrap up by asking one that's kind of really timely right now. I remember in spring training a few years ago, you and I talking about Todd Helton. I actually called Todd Helton. I don't know
Yes,
if you remember
I
that,
remember
and got
that.
him and got you two to kind of like talking to each other a little bit, I think, about it. He was your favorite player, obviously, Wyoming, Colorado. What does it mean to you that the guy you kind of grew up idolizing, if I'm using the word right, just got elected to the Hall of Fame?
For me, it's amazing. I think that he had a knock against him playing in Coors Field for for his whole career. And I get it. I get it. It's a hitter's ballpark, but he just consistently put up numbers year after year. Even playing in the 81 games that he would play on the road, it didn't matter. He was still a great hitter and such a presence in the lineup. I just go back to, I think, and obviously I was biased growing up in that part of the country, but I remember watching Big Poppy and I remember watching the Yankee series and everything. But when we would consistently talk about, who are the best left-handed hitters in the game, my dad and I, when we were trying to, trying to work on my swing when I was younger, and who we should try and mimic, it was consistently Todd Helton that came up, that was in that conversation. I'm not arguing that he was the best of that time. I'm just saying he's in that conversation of that era, when I was growing up for 10 years there, where it was like, man, Todd Helton, he just puts up numbers each and every year, and he playing, almost every game, and he's just like, he's that guy that you can rely on, and you stick right in the middle of your lineup, and you know that you're gonna get great numbers out of him. And so I am so excited for him. I think, obviously it's something that I think he deserves. I think that he's deserved for a while now. And I did get to talk to him when, when you guys got me in contact with him, and he was just amazing to talk to. So humble, and in everything and anything I asked him about, like, how he hit left-handed pitching so well, what he did, in order to do that, how he approached runners in scoring position, all these things. And he was so open with me and honest, and such a great guy. And I was so fortunate to have that conversation. It really helped change my career. And so someone that has a special place in my heart that I think, deserves to be in the hall. And I'm so glad that he got that nod.
Well, Brandon, we really do appreciate this. We John and I are good reporters. We don't leave any loose threads here. So on the way out, somebody on YouTube is going to notice that your dog has popped in a few times. What's your dog's name?
I've got two little ones, Jake and JoJo, and
Jake and JoJo.
both rescues. So they pop in every now and
All right. Well,
again.
Brandon, John and I look forward to seeing you in St. Lucie. Thank you so much for the time. All the best. Health
Thank
production.
you.
We'll see you soon, okay?
Yes, we'll see you soon.
Thanks,
Thank you guys
Brandon.
for having me.
John and I, of course, thank Brandon Nimmo for joining us on the show. John, our last before at least a couple of teams go to spring training, hit or error. What do you got?
I'm going to do a hit, and it's probably a little bit premature, but the Royals are trying to lock up Bobby Witt Jr., superstar shortstop. If they can do that, kudos to them. I hear that they are making progress. If they don't get it done, I'll be sure to give them an error next week to make up for this. But for now, we give the Royals a hit.
Yeah, I wonder if the framework looks something like Julio Rodriguez's deal that kind of has like that multi-tiered possibility of it, like lots of money both ways, shorter and long term.
I think so, but he does have 2 complete years, and Julio did that before he had 1 year complete. So that could change the equation to some degree.
Yeah, it feels like the Royals want to put down some tentpoles. John, I'm just going to th throw out a weird hit. I think it's a hit on. You know what's a good thing if you want to kind of make some money maybe in the marketplace is be touched by the Rays pitching group. They do have a lot of injuries, but man, do they fix people. Last year, Robert Stephenson went there. He had pitched for the Pirates to the point where he went there at a 5.14 ERA. He was arguably right there with Felix Bautista and Devin Williams as the best relief pitcher in baseball from the moment they touched him there. And he got a 3-year, $33 million contract. At the moment, Jake Diekman is released by the White Sox. He has a 7.94 ERA. He's 36 year old. He hadn't pitched well in the last 2 seasons. He went to the Rays. And he, his last 16 games, he didn't give up a run. He was really durable and good for them again. And he signed with the Mets, got $4 million with a chance to make $4 million more on a vesting option in 2025. And I guess we should throw in that Tyler Glass now got 5 years at a little over 136 million. He did reach 120 innings last year. By the way, that's his career high. And he still got this money. I think if you want to make money someplace along the way, stop by and you're a pitcher, you might want to stop by the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah, I mean, Glasnow, that to me is amazing. I mean, he obviously has number one stuff, but I mean, people are complaining about Snell's injuries and innings. He's thrown 180 innings at least a couple times, 120 as your max. The Dodgers do a great job and they get bargains even on stars. They got a bargain on, to me, on Betts and on Freeman, but to me, $136 million for Glasnow, along with the Yamamoto deal. At $325 million, that was pretty pricey. They obviously believe in those guys, and you're right, Tampa fixes guys. I guess that's what the Mets are trying to do with Fujinami, right? He's
Yeah.
yeah. You reminded me with a 7.9 ERA. I think that's what he had last year
Yeah, he
with
did better, a
somebody,
little better with the Orioles, though, right?
with Oakland, I think maybe. Yeah. So maybe the Mets will become that fixer now. Everybody's trying to emulate the Rays. I know I'm here in Miami. They're obviously trying to be the right next Rays East. We'll see if they can do it. I mean, I get it. I mean, if you can win with a $70 million payroll consistently, that's a pretty good trick.
Yeah, good trick. If you look, we'll be talking about the Rays, the Marlins, obviously the Mets and Yankees. John, I think by the next time we speak, I'll be in Arizona. You'll probably be in Port St. Lucie. We'll be flip-flopping all spring training, talking about our travels. If you stick with the show, a podcast from the New York Post, we always thank our producers, Jake Brown and Andrew Hart. Don't forget Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to our podcast, apply, rate, review. It helps the show. We're also on the New York Post Sports YouTube channel. Give a look. You probably, if you have a good eye, you'll see one of Brandon Nimmo's dogs sneak into the interview at the beginning. And John, it's upon us. Now on when we're doing shows, there's going to be baseball players in uniform running around, at least in spring training. So stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.